All right. Hello, everybody. It's good to see you. I decided not to sit here with the computer in my lap again. Something about me, I used to always sit with the computer in my lap, but it's getting harder. I don't know what, it's getting harder for me to do that. It feels better sitting it somewhere else. So right now it's sitting on my bed. And if I look, you know, if I'm not looking at the camera sometimes, it's because I've got my chair in my bedroom turned around, so that I can look out and see the mountains. If I look straight ahead, I can see Greenhorn. And if I look out this other smaller window, I can see Silver Mountain. So you might catch me staring off into the distance as I'm sharing. What really made me do it is I noticed when I was listening to Anne earlier, because the window was behind me, my face was all dark. So I thought it was better to turn around so the face was lit up. But goodness, now I have the view. I'm going to start by playing a song. This is another Rebecca Folsom song. Again, some of you experienced Rebecca Folsom while you were here in La Vida. She was our concert on the last night of the retreat. I heard Shauna play a Rebecca Folsom song the other night, Extraordinary Days. So I've picked a different one. And I think this fits well with Anne's teaching, and also with the Tao verse that we're going to be looking at. So it's a perfect Rebecca Folsom song. This song is called Breathe.
Lately I've been holding too tight. We'll drive in fast.
Oh, wait.
Make it deep.
I knew something kept going.
My mind talking in circles. I've been holding.
Okay, you guys ready? One, two, three. It looks like the song starts really fast, so here we go.
I've been holding too tight to the wheel, driving fast and making deals. My mind talking in circles, my heart's warning cry. Slow down, take a different turn.
sweet song, huh? All right, so we are here for the Tao Te Ching, and I think the Tao Te Ching is going to follow Anne's teaching perfectly. Twin teachings. Because we are looking at verse 36, which is about purification. So let me read this to you. If one wishes to shrink it, one must first expand it. If one wishes to weaken it, one must first strengthen it. If one wishes to discard it, one must first promote it. If one wishes to seize it, one must first give it. This is called subtle clarity. The soft and weak overcome the tough and strong. Fish cannot leave the depths. The sharp instruments of the state cannot be shown to the people. So let's look at Stephen Mitchell. Again, verse 36. If you want to shrink something, you must first allow it to expand. If you want to get rid of something, you must first allow it to flourish. If you want to take something, you must first allow it to be given. This is called the subtle perception of the way things are. The soft overcomes the hard. The slow overcomes the fast. Let your workings remain a mystery. Just show people the results. All right, Wayne Dyer is next in line. He looks real excited to be read. See, doesn't he? Look like he's excited to be read next. Here we go. Should you want to contain something, you must deliberately let it expand. Should you want to weaken something, you must deliberately let it grow strong. Should you want to eliminate something, you must deliberately allow it to flourish. Should you want to take something away, you must deliberately grant it access. The lesson here is called the wisdom of obscurity. The gentle outlasts the strong, the obscure outlasts the obvious. Fish cannot leave deep waters, and a country's weapons should not be displayed. We'll look at one more, and then we'll dive in. So this is actually verse 80 in Victor Mara's translation. When you wish to contract something, you must momentarily expand it. Oh, contract. Yeah, not like a signed contract. Like, why is he talking about contracts? You know, contract, right? Make it smaller. If you want to contract something, you must momentarily expand it. When you wish to weaken something, you must momentarily strengthen it. When you wish to reject something, you must momentarily join with it. When you wish to seize something, you must momentarily give it up. This is called subtle insight. The soft and weak conquer the strong. Fish cannot be removed from the watery depths. The profitable instruments of state cannot be shown to people. So all basically the same, a little different, but no drastic differences. So I'm going to go with Stephen Mitchell to start because I really love Stephen Mitchell. I love the simplicity of Stephen Mitchell. First of all, I want to talk to you about Gunsmoke. Would you like to hear about Gunsmoke last night? people who know me well know that I watch Gunsmoke 2 times a week. I say every night, but that's an exaggeration. I don't do anything every night. But I watch it a couple times a week at night, maybe sometimes 3 times in 3 week times, but usually just a couple. But what has started to happen to me, when I first started watching Gunsmoke, I had no idea why I loved it. I don't even know how I got started watching it. It was last February. My mom had been here for 2 months. We hadn't been watching it. And she left, and I suddenly just started watching it, like, every night. And in fact, at first, it felt like an addiction. It's on at 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock, and at 10 o'clock. And I would just watch it all the way till 11. So I was staying up too late. And I joked with my mom. Her husband used to love Gunsmoke. And I joked with my mom when she went back to Alabama, her husband must have stayed here, you know, because suddenly I started watching Gunsmoke and I couldn't quit. And then I started noticing what felt like a crush on Matt Dillon. And I think some of the ladies here remember that. And so I started cutting back on Gunsmoke. I started making sure that I only watched Gunsmoke from 8 to 9 and I avoid the 10 and 11 shows because I saw Gunsmoke as a problem. And then one night I started noticing that I was contemplating Gunsmoke. I started noticing that I was contemplating especially Matt Dillon and his decisions and his choices. And then I started watching Gunsmoke differently. I still only watch the 8 to 9 show. I turn it off as soon as they start that 9 o'clock when I turn it off so I go to bed. But I feel much freer about watching Gunsmoke. And as a result, I find Gunsmoke is an important part of my contemplation. So now with that said, let's talk about last night's show. last night what happened in Gunsmoke was for those of you who aren't Gunsmoke fanatics, Matt Dillon is not a sheriff. He's a U.S. Marshal, which means he works for the federal government. And he's the U.S. Marshal that works in Dodge City. It's his job to keep the peace in Dodge City, Kansas. Well, in last night's show, the government, because there's a lot of shooting in Dodge City, a lot of death in Dodge City, the government sent an auditor to Dodge City to audit Marshall Dillon and to help improve the peace in the city. And the auditor decided, because, you know, everybody in Gunsmoke wears guns and they have these, you know, where they, you know, who can draw the fastest kind of things all the time, and people are always getting shot. So the auditor decided that that they shouldn't carry guns, that they should make everybody check their gun, and no guns should be allowed in the city limits. And Matt Dillon tried to explain to him that out here, allowing people to have guns actually keeps the peace better than if nobody had a gun. Because people have to think twice before getting in fights and that kind of thing, right? Because the guy they're talking to has a gun. And this guy didn't believe it. So Marshall Dillon said, okay, well then, you know, we'll do it your way. And he put up all these signs and made everybody check their guns. And everybody was shocked that Marshall Dillon was doing this. And Marshall Dillon just kept saying, well, just wait. We have to wait until he learns his lesson. We have to wait until he learns his lesson. And what ended up happening, one guy who didn't follow the law and didn't check his gun, had a gun hidden, got in an argument, and was easily able to kill somebody because the other guy didn't have a gun to defend himself. That was the first thing that happened. But then the next thing that happened was all of the people got so mad at this auditor that they decided to tar and feather him. So they grabbed him and they were tarring and feathering him. And Marshall Dillon came out there and said, you know, stop it. You know, don't do that and all this. And they're like, you can't do anything, Marshall. What are you going to do? Shoot us? You can't shoot us. We're unarmed. You'll never shoot an unarmed man. You can't do anything. And this is when the man realized that, again, the law of the West was different. And in order for Marshall Dillon to be able to protect, the other guy actually had to have a gun too, because otherwise Marshall Dillon, you know, by the law of the West, was impotent. He couldn't draw on an unarmed man. Therefore, with, you know, 25 guys tar and feathering someone, he really had no means of control. And so in the end, Matt was able to reinstate everybody carry guns. They ran off. They didn't tar and feather the guy. They just ran off to get their guns back. And this guy apologized, says he, you know, from Washington, they didn't understand the way things were. And he realized now that, you know, in this case, letting everybody carry a gun did help to keep the peace. So the reason I told you that story is because that's what this DAO is about. You know what Marshall Dillon did? He didn't want to invoke that law, but he allowed it to flourish. You see? He allowed it to flourish until it was seen that this law was not helpful in Dodge City, and then the law could be invoked. So we can use that example. You know, the first thing that comes to my mind when I read verse 36 is always emotional purification. You know, let's say I want to avoid a broken heart. I don't like broken hearts, right? And so what I do in my relationship with my partner is I'm always people-pleasing because I'm terrified my partner will leave me and I don't want a broken heart. So I'm always people-pleasing, always people-pleasing, always people-pleasing. And at the same time, I'm always afraid, right? Because I'm trying to control things so that I don't experience what I'm afraid of. In fact, we talked about this in Gentle Healing last night. We talked about when you try and avoid certain things, that really what you're doing is protecting your fear. You're putting forth effort to protect your fear every time you avoid something. And Mom told me, Shana, that you're coming dancing with us tomorrow night. Yeah, when you try and avoid something, you are putting forth effort to protect your fear. Well, again, that's really what the Tao is saying here, is that if you want to get rid of something, first you have to allow it to flourish. So if I was trying to heal my mind and get to perfect inner peace, and I noticed that I was doing things in my relationship that I would not normally do, I was people-pleasing because I wanted to avoid a broken heart. I was really afraid of a broken heart. If healing became more important to me than the relationship, which at some point that shift occurs, I would immediately stop people-pleasing every time I noticed it. There may be times that I don't notice it, that it's still unconscious, right? But if I noticed I was about to do something, not because I wanted to do it, not because it felt like guidance was coming from my heart, but only because I was trying to avoid my fear of my partner leaving me, I would choose not to do it. And if I had the type of partner that did get angry when I didn't meet his expectations, you know, and did threaten to leave, and I got all emotionally upset, and I noticed the broken heart, I would allow all of that. Just like Marshall Dillon allowed, you know, the situation to get somewhat dire in Dodge City. And the reason for allowing all that is because I don't want to continue to put forth effort to protect my fear. I want to become free of my fear. In this story, my fear of having a broken heart, even if my heart gets broken in the process. And you know, this happens to everyone in one way or another. I mean, every single person on the planet is avoiding certain situations or trying to control things in order to avoid certain situations. They're trying to protect themselves. And by doing that, they are keeping whatever it is they're trying to avoid. They're keeping that fear within them. You know, like if I'm a people pleaser, every time I people please, I'm actually keeping my fear. So what the Tao is telling us is that if we want to be free, first we have to allow it to flourish. If you want to shrink something, you must first allow it to expand. If you want to get rid of something, you must first allow it to flourish. So what are the things that we do to avoid broken hearts, to avoid perceiving ourselves as deeply unworthy, to avoid feeling judged, to avoid feeling not secure. You know, what are the things we do to avoid the things that we fear? And again, it's funny that this should be coming up directly after we had this conversation last night. But I want to say the same thing I said last night is, if we really want to heal, we have to stop avoiding. Now, as I said last night, you know, this doesn't mean do something stupid. This doesn't mean, you know, like, if you're afraid of heights, go jump off a bridge. It doesn't mean if you're afraid of crossing the street, don't cross the street with your, you know, go cross the street with your eyes closed and not looking. And, you know, it doesn't mean do anything stupid. But we all avoid things that are actually perfectly safe, that can't hurt us even physically, right? And we avoid them because we're protecting our fear. I remember at one point when I was contemplating my fear and my fear of allowing the fear to flourish. It's funny because I was willing to let the fear flourish somewhat. You know, I had an understanding of this teaching. I was willing to let the fear flourish somewhat, but it was kind of like I had to stop it from going all the way. I wonder how many people do this and don't realize it. Yeah, you know, like let's just make up a formula here. Let's imagine that it would take me 10 hours to be empty of the fear. That I let it flourish, let it flourish, let it flourish for 10 hours, and then I would be done. Well, in that made up scenario, made up formula, what I might do is let it flourish for 8.5 hours, or 9 hours, or 9.5 hours. But I would never let it flourish the full 10 hours. I always let it flourish for a while, you know, rest, accept, and trusted with it for a while, and then felt like I had to do something in the last hour to make myself feel safe again. Now, Jay wants to say something, and then I'll come back and continue.
I think I'm understanding what you're talking about. I guess in your own journey that you've shared, I could compare it to you being in a situation of shifting away from the corporate world into Awakening Together. Your bank account is dwindling down. You're getting afraid you're not going to have enough money to pay the mortgage. Bank account is dwindling down. You're allowing the fear to unfold. Only that time you went ahead and allowed it to go all the way. Is that an appropriate analogy to bring up with what you're saying, or is this something different?
Yeah, well, that's an appropriate analogy. However, in that case, I did let it go all the way. But if I hadn't, what might have happened is at the last hour, I might have picked up the phone and called my dad or called my mom or somebody and said, I need some money.
To get money.
I never did that, but that would be an example.
Okay, so that's, yeah, okay.
You know, and I think a lot of people do that. Like they let the fear flourish for a while, but then at some point, you know, it's like it's getting near the end. It's like, oh my God. They panic and they do something to make
it. It's like when it gets serious, right? Like we can't deal with this anymore. This is serious, you know. You gotta stop this, basically. Yeah.
And so what I did then, hopefully I can get back to where I was. My memory is like nano existent anymore. So what I did was I went in and I inquired, okay, I'm back. I went in and I inquired as to why I couldn't let it flourish all the way. You know, why I always had to stop it in the 11th hour. And the answer that I came up with was because I believed the fear protected me. You know, I thought that if I didn't have fear, I would be stupid. If I didn't have fear, I would jump off a bridge. If I didn't have fear, I would cross the street with my eyes closed without looking. I really thought fear protected me. And so I had to look at that very, very deeply because believe it or not, it was a very deep belief. It wasn't the kind of thing that you could just glance at and say, oh, that's silly, and be done with it. And so I couldn't allow the fear to flourish all the way, because if I emptied my tank of fear, I wouldn't be safe. That was the belief. So I had to keep some fear in reserve. And probably I was inquiring about this on my own around the time that I wrote NTI 2 Timothy, because that shows up in NTI 2 Timothy. By the way, somebody should tell me that I should get copies of NTI and Inner Ramana and Levita. Because if I was at home, if I was at my other home, I would just grab it. But I think I can do this on the Kindle. So I'm just faster at opening a paper book than I am using the Kindle. There we go. Now, how do I get to 2 Timothy? Okay, I'm at 1 Timothy. I'm getting there. Okay, here we go. 2 Timothy chapter 2. You protect your fear. You protect it because you believe it protects you. You believe that there is something worse than fear beneath your fear. And so you protect your fear by keeping it in storage. But you will not find your release this way. Skipping a paragraph, it says, you fear that to let loose your fear and experience it also is to come to the foothold of destruction. You believe that to step to that place and not be destroyed, you must hold to the last remaining shred of fear. In other words, you truly believe fear is your salvation. This is why you hold to it. But fear is not your salvation. Fear is the opposite of salvation. To realize this, you must be willing to experience that which you fear. Everybody see Don's face when I said that? You must be willing to experience that which you fear and let it go, meaning let the fear flourish. By experiencing fear and not perishing, you learn that you cannot perish. This understanding taken to heart is a true glimpse of who you are. Here is a trustworthy saying. I am all that I am, and that is all I am promised to be. But I cannot limit myself through fear and know all that I am. I choose to release the limits I have chosen for myself. In their release, I see that I am. Make this the constant prayer of your heart. In purpose, step forth unto your release. Now skipping another paragraph. It is through fear that you are purified. Do not shy away from fear. It is through fear that you realize your own shine. Because it is through experiencing fear and releasing fear that you learn fear has no hold on you. The unlimited cannot be limited by fear. Do not flee that which life is bringing to you when you know that you see it is coming. Turn to it in faith, having faith that it cannot hurt you. It has come only to teach you. Move from the thinking mind to the heart, which is the place from which you may experience the gift without denying it. Experience it and trust. It is only an experience, and it places no limits on you. It is peace that shall carry you through fear. When the fear has dissipated, as fog within sunlight, you shall see that only peace remains. Remember that the world and its thoughts are only props. Dive directly into the experience. By experiencing it in full without a wish for salvation, you experience it without dying, and that is salvation. So you see how that is really saying the same thing the Tao is saying about allow it to flourish? And again, so many of us, you know, we practice rest, accept, and trust to a point. I mean, you know, we understand the teaching. We do it to a point. But then in that 11th hour, we jump out of our rest, accept, and trust, and we take some action in order to make ourselves comfortable again. And that's what that's addressing. We're keeping our fear in storage because we think the fear keeps us safe. And in reality, we're avoiding realizing our unaffected nature. And that's why Shauna's going dancing with us Thursday night. Right, Shauna? Even my mom, you know, my mom hasn't heard any of these teachings, but last Thursday I was just reading the paper, and the paper talked about this ecstatic dance happening at the Mercantile tomorrow night. And I read it to my mom, and my mom said something like, oh, I'm not doing that. I would be uncomfortable dancing with other people like that, you know. And then she paused for a second. She said, I'm going to get over my discomfort. Let's go. All by herself, she did that. And last night, I had actually forgotten about it. And then last night, while I was teaching this same topic, I remembered it. And so I invited everybody in La Vida. In fact, I almost ordered everybody in La Vida to go. Maybe I should need to take the word almost out of this. I ordered everybody in La Vida to go. And then I went back out and I thought, oh, maybe my mom's forgotten. I said, Mom, do you remember we're going dancing Thursday night? She goes, oh, yeah, I remember. So she's determined to get over her self-consciousness. Isn't that sweet? If you want to shrink something, you must first allow it to expand. If you want to get rid of something, you must first allow it to flourish. And we're talking 100%, you know, like Matt Dillon did last night on Gunsmoke, right? Allow it to flourish all the way. That's how you learn you're not affected by it. That's how you learn who you are. If you never learn you're not affected by it because you always stop it short, you will also never learn who you are. And then the next line says, if you want to take something, you must first allow it to be given. Let's see how Derek translated that line, because I think he did a little differently. He said, if one wishes to seize it, one must first give it. So an example of this, a perfect example of this, is most people like money. They want to receive money. And they are terrified to give it away. Except for, of course, the tiniest little amount that will make them extremely comfortable. You know, like if you make $100,000 a year, you might be very willing to give away $100 a month. Because the truth is, if you make $100,000 a year, you're never going to miss $100 a month anyway, right? So just the tiniest little amount, because then I can feel secure. You know, tithing, let's talk about tithing for a moment. Tithing is a tradition which people have forgotten, I think, what tithing is, because often people will mention that they tithe when actually they're giving that tiniest little amount. Tithing was defined as 10% of your income. Jay says, are you talking about me? Well, not you alone. Not you alone. This is most people. Very few people I'm not talking about. All right? This is most people, because people, what does money mean to you? Let's start with that. What does money mean to you? It means that you're secure, right? And so you're afraid to give up your money, because then you won't be secure. So tithing, which was set back way back in Jewish history with Methuselah and Abraham, tithing is 10%. If you make $100,000 a year, that means, and this is before taxes, that means tithing is giving $10,000 a year. And that scares most people to death. But what the Tao is saying, and what every spiritual teacher, every spiritual teaching you'll ever study will tell you, is that in order to receive, you have to give. And the giving has to come first. Let's talk about love. The same philosophy is true with love. Most people, in one way or another, withhold their love. Everybody wants to receive love. But most of us withhold our love. We love those who we feel safe loving. Just like we give that little bit of money that we feel safe giving. You know, so if I know that Jay really likes me because Jay is always saying really nice things about me, I can feel safe loving him. And I don't know anybody here that I'm aware of that talks bad about me, but Sharon, can I pick on you? Let's say I know that Sharon, every time she's on the phone with somebody, she's talking bad about me. She's always judging me. Then I might not feel so secure loving Sharon. Do you see? I'm withholding my love from Sharon because I don't feel secure. Well, it's the same philosophy as money. If I want to receive love, I need to give love, and I actually need to give abundantly, which means loving those who don't love me. How can I receive love by withholding love? So the Tao says, if one wishes to seize it, or we could say if one wishes to receive it, one must first give it. First. That's the whole thing. You know, like if we're talking about money, people may say, well, someday when I, you know, get this raise, then I'll donate. Or someday when my kids are out of college, then I'll donate. Or someday when I'm, you know, blah, blah, blah. But this says first. Same thing with love. Well, when she treats me better, then I'll love her. This says first. You do the giving first. And anyone who knows spiritual law knows that whatever you give, you receive. There's a story about some lady, I think she was from the West, went to Ramana Ashram when Ramana Maharshi was there, and she gave a sizable donation. And then something happened. I don't know if I know what, or if I did, I forgot what, but something happened and she got ticked off. Her expectations were not met, whatever they were. And she went and asked for her donation back. Now, there's not an organization in the world that has to give you a donation back once you've donated it. It's theirs, you know. They can just say, screw you. So the manager of the ashram went to Raman and said, what do? She's here, you know, requesting her donation back. And Ramana said, give it to her. But he also said that she'll learn her own lesson from that. I don't remember his exact words, but the idea was she was clogging up her own stream. And you know what else he was doing? He was allowing that clog to flourish. Give it back to her. Let her learn her own lesson. So what do you want to receive? You know, I mean, we talked about money. We talked about love. What about enlightenment? Have you ever thought about giving enlightenment first? How would you give enlightenment if you want to receive it? Jay, is that something you wanted to share?
It was just a quick, funny story about something my parents allowed me to do that they knew was a mistake. When I was 8 or 10 years old, I had this thing where I would pack my suitcase and I'm going out on my own now. And I would, little Jay would be all excited about packing his suitcase and I'm going, bye-bye, walk out the door. And my mom would never stop me. And I would go through the whole process. I think I was imitating my father when he'd go on trips or something. And then I was all excited, my own man now. I'm going out on a trip. I'm leaving home, going out on my own. And my mom didn't stop me. And I walked out of the porch, got about halfway down the sidewalk. And I'm like, I can't leave. And I just, little 10-year-old Jay walked back in, tail between his legs. And he's like, okay, well, I'm coming back.
Well, you know, and your mom was very wise. This is where some parents make mistakes with their children, is they never allow the children's mistakes to flourish. The parent is too afraid to allow the child's mistake to flourish. And so they swoop in, you know, they pay the child's traffic tickets. They, you know, smooth things over with the school. They do whatever they have to do. And those children tend not to fully mature. They're always somewhat dependent on the parents. They never become adults, no matter how old they get. So, you know, and of course, the reason the parents do that is they're still their own fear. They're too afraid to let their children learn from their own mistakes. Right? So back to the question, how do you give enlightenment? Shauna answered the answer that I had in my mind. You be enlightened now. You live it now. To the best of your ability. You know, I mean, if I was to live enlightenment in 2005 and then live enlightenment in 2010 and then 2015 and then today, that would actually look different. You know, in 2005, I couldn't have lived the enlightenment that I can live today. That just means progress is being made, right? But whatever enlightenment you have already received, you give it away by living it, by being that. And that includes with highly unenlightened people, right? People who are angry at you, putting you down, gossiping about you. You know the saying, two wrongs don't make a right? There's a lot of wisdom in that. I mean, you know, a lot of people think, well, she doesn't treat me well, so I don't have to treat her well. That's not enlightened. What did Jesus say about if somebody strikes you on the cheek, turn the other cheek, right? I mean, that's really this teaching that you treat everyone with love and respect and honor. And, you know, there's another great story about Ramana Maharshi. Back before the ashram was, you know, big, and I suspect now actually somewhat wealthy. Yeah, the robbers. Back when it was a very poor ashram, and in fact, they barely had food every day, there were some robbers who thought they had money, and they came and broke into the ashram. And one of the things they did was they beat Ramana Maharshi. He was laying on the side, on his side on the ground where they were beating him, and they beat him on one side, just beat him and beat him and beat him. And when they finally stepped, he rolled over and asked them if they wanted to beat the other side. Of course they didn't, you know, they couldn't. Even they heard the lesson. What if you chose to always treat everyone with love and respect? I mean, do unto others as you would have others do unto you. Give what you want to receive is what that says. I mean, how many of you would like to receive love? How many of you would like to receive respect? How many of you would like to receive kindness? Right? So that's what you give. That's how you be. So if you want to shrink something, you must first allow it to expand. If you want to get rid of something, you must first allow it to flourish. If you want to take something, or we're saying receive something, you must first allow it to be given, or you must first give it. This is called the subtle perception of the way things are. Now, Stephen says, the soft overcomes the hard. Peace Pilgrim used to say, let's see if I can remember her exact words, overcome hatred with love. Right? Recently, a friend of mine felt misperceived. She felt that she spoke to someone without any type of hostility, and that person heard hostility. What I told her to do, I told her, when you speak to people, feel your body. If your body feels hard, you probably sound more gruff than you think you do. Right? Even behind your sweetness, there's probably a gruffness that can be felt. You know, feel for the softness in your body. Your body won't lie to you. Your mind will. Don't ask your mind if you're being nice, because it'll lie. But your body won't lie to you. So feel for the softness in your body. And if you don't feel soft, if you feel tight, maybe don't speak at all. You know, if you can. I mean, it depends on the situation. That's why I use the word maybe. Yeah, feel for the softness in your body and only speak when you genuinely feel soft in the body. The soft overcomes the hard. The slow overcomes the fast. Seems like this is Jacqueline's story, but I'm not sure. Somebody's story. I think Jacqueline told me this, that you heard some teacher, when they were teaching, they looked at the clock and said, oh, you know, why don't you tell the story? You'll remember it better than me.
Oh, it's a short story. I believe it was Dr. David Hawkins in one of his teachings. He's like, he looked at the clock during a teaching and said, oh my goodness, look what time it is. We're running out of time, so we better slow down.
So, yeah. You better slow down. The slow overcomes the fast. You know, there was a message that I received from Inner Wisdom when I first joined with Laurent. And in that message, there was a line I've never forgotten. It said, the slow way is the fast way. Because, you know, when we're rushing about fast, that's when we're more likely to be hard and not notice it and sound gruff to someone else. That's when we're more likely to allow all of these unconscious thoughts and believe them and, you know, get ourselves worked up and upset in whatever way we do. And to be honest, that's when we're most likely to make mistakes. It's when we're most likely to not be aware. So the slow way is the fast way. And of course, it really meant to awakening, to enlightenment. The slow way is the fast way. You slow down. You pay attention to what's going on with you. You know, you keep one eye pointing this direction, always noticing what's going on with you before you speak to another person, before you act. I remember Michael Langford sometime in the last year, because I remember I was at the condo. He sent us like a 20-minute talk that I shared in Gentle Healing about slowing down. 20 minutes talking about slowing down. Pretty boring topic for 20 whole minutes. But it needs to be heard for 20 whole minutes. Right? Because otherwise it goes in one ear and out the other, and we're right back to our fast-paced lives. The slow overcomes the fast. And then he says, let your workings remain a mystery. Just show people the results. What that means to me is I don't need to go around telling everybody. I'm being kind. I'm watching myself and make sure I'm always kind. You know, I give 15% of my income. You know, I that's what I do. Did you know that every night when I get off work, I go somewhere else and volunteer? Did you know that about me? Right? I love even people who hate me. you know, Jesus talked about this too, right? Jesus talked about how the hypocrites would go out into the streets and pray out loud. And I guess back then you would try and make yourself look like you were fasting. So they would oil their hair or whatever, so everybody know they were fasting, because that was perceived as holy. And instead he said to go into the closet and close the door and there pray to your Father. If you go into the closet and close the door and there pray to your Father, how many people are going to know how holy you are? He also said that the hypocrites had already received their full reward, which means they wanted attention and they were getting attention. There probably were people who thought they were great, pious people, that all they were getting was is attention from humans. They weren't getting any genuine reward. So let your workings remain a mystery. Stop seeking attention from others for how good or holy you are. Hey, Ron's outside. Must be a nice day in Atlanta. Let your workings remain a mystery. And then it says, just show people the results. I don't think that really means show them. Like, did you guys notice? Did you notice? I think that just means just be enlightened now. Let them see it if they see it, or not see it if they don't see it, right? Just be enlightened now. So if you want to shrink something, you must first allow it to expand. If you want to get rid of something, you must first allow it to flourish. If you want to take something, you must first allow it to be given. This is called the subtle perception of the way things are. The soft overcomes the hard. The slow overcomes the fast. Let your workings remain a mystery. Just show people the results, if they notice at all. Let's listen to another song, since we have a few minutes left. How about, but Let's Be Too Much. This is a really good song. It's a little long. I'll cut it early. Let's Be Too Much. Ready? Here we go.
I've closed my doors not to keep the world from wandering. To keep myself in check, and the ripple I might send. Is my smile too wide, my laugh too loud?
place. Let's burn it down in the holy place. Light our passion, scale the walls. Say the lines, but it's wearing thin. I can't hold back, don't know what's next. I can't pretend that at a moment's notice I won't go wild. Tear down the stage I'm in, let's be too much for this place. Let's burn it down in a holy place. Light our passions. Walls over the edge like it's nothing at all. Free fall, free fall. Throw open your mind and let the dance begin. Throw open your mind, release yourself to be carried on some wild way.
Thank you very much for hanging out with me. I am releasing the mic.